What up, what up, everybody? This is Double G for the Fight Game Podcast. John LaRocca by my side tonight as we talk about AEW Dynamite, a very emotional show, an emotional main event. And we're also going to talk a little bit about, we have a new, brand new segment to keep the show timely. But before that, I want to mention Andrew Zarian and I, for this very YouTube channel, if you are watching any of this on video, also in audio for We're Live Pal, we're going to be live after the Royal Rumble. We've never done a post pay-per-view show before for We're Live Pal. So Andrew and I are testing something, experimenting with something, see who will be hanging out with us as we go live. So right after Royal Rumble's done, we're going to jump on, and the live stream is already up. So if you go to the F4W YouTube page, you can set a notification for a reminder and you'll be reminded when we go live. And for you listening on audio, we will also put the audio show up in the We're Live Pal feed. One more thing, and this is Fight Game Media specific, so this isn't F4W specific, but I have a brand new show. It's going to be a short series. It is a segment that John and I used to do on this very show called The Road to WrestleMania. Instead of adding it to this show, to the Fight Game Podcast, we created a brand new show. The video and live stream will be on the Fight Game Media YouTube channel, and the audio will be exclusive to our Patreon, Patreon.com/Fight Game Media. So a couple of fun things coming out. The Road to WrestleMania series will only exist through WrestleMania, and so it'll be just a couple of months, but we'll have video, we'll have audio on the Patreon, and yeah, so that's to catch everybody up. So John, I told you about this new segment that I wanted to do, and it's inspired by one of my favorite podcasts, my favorite sports media podcast, called and the Andrew Marchant, the Marchant and Oran show. John Oran works for Sports Business Journal, and Andrew Marchant works for the New York Post. And it's really fun to listen to because they're in the nooks and crannies of sports media, sports business. And they do a segment to open every show called Who's Up and Who's Down. And it's sort of like a way to recap, you know, one major kudos and one, you know, major sort of thumbs down. So we're going to do something similar. It may survive and we may do it every show. It may be a one and done and we're out. But we want to call it, in honor of Dave Meltzer, thumbs up, thumbs down. Just like every show, you got to let Dave know if it was a thumbs up or a thumbs down. And so I gave you maybe 5 hours notice that we're going to do this.
I got some, don't worry.
All right, but I'll go first because I also want to kind of educate the audience on how we're going to do this. My thumbs up for this week is to Tony Khan and to the fan base, the AEW fan base, who were very vocal. If you listen to Wrestling Observer Radio with Brian and Dave, they were also very vocal about why last week, when you could tell that they wanted to do more about Jay Briscoe and they couldn't. And it turns out that it was because of the company that pays them to do the show, Warner Brothers Discovery. And, you know, this tweet that happened many years ago that Jay had been accountable for. And I, you know, for stuff like that, it's kind of hard to understand, like, was he really accountable for it? But you hear, if you read the Observer, Ian Riccaboni and all these people who are really close to him, you know, said like, God, he was a changed guy. Like, it kind of opened his eyes. He was not that person. And so no one smartened up Warner Brothers Discovery. Then the show happened. And then you heard all of the correspondence, all the fans who were frustrated, the wrestling media people who were frustrated about why. And then on, I believe it was on Monday night show, Wrestling Observer Radio, Dave said that Mark Briscoe was also not allowed to be on the show. And they didn't understand why. And then as it turns out, it was yesterday, Tuesday, Tony Khan tweets out the story on Twitter that the main event to tonight's AEW Dynamite was Mark Briscoe against Jay Lethal. So something happened. Something turned these guys around. And I'm assuming Tony Khan had a lot to do with that. So I want to give him kudos. But just also the fans, like, you guys were heard. Whether you were heard through Tony and helping Tony with his conversation, the wrestling media, whether it was the wrestling media plus the fans plus whatever it was, that is my thumbs up for the week, because it shows that true community and the ability to speak out against stuff that you think is probably wrong still happens. And, you know, I'm sure when it comes to WBD, the AEW wrestling Dynamite is not necessarily like the things that they're thinking about. They're thinking about cutting all this crazy debt that they have. Mm-hmm. So I was very happy to see that. They deserve a little kudos too, to kind of go, okay, like, we screwed up on this. Like, you know, we're going to change our minds here.
Yeah.
What is your thumbs up?
My thumbs up actually is a wrestler, a young wrestler, not a mainstream wrestler, a guy that's making waves. His name is Leighton Buzzard. He's the ICW champion out in Scotland. Great young wrestler. I've covered him many times on the Take It Home podcast, on the Fight Game media free feed, our free feed site for our free podcast. And recently, Will Ospreay was doing like a challenge to people. Like, he wants to, you know, Will Ospreay, now he has all this, you know, tenure now, and he's a big star now, and he wants to give back to some young wrestlers in the European wrestling scene. So I guess all these wrestlers started cutting promos to get that match with Will Ospreay, and Leighton Buzzard won because he's a really good promo, above as being a good wrestler as well. So I'm really happy for that guy. He's really making strides, and I've been watching him for the last couple of years, and I've really seen his improvement. So, you know, I think he's gonna have a great match with Ospreay, and I hope this catapults him even further into getting bookings out here in the United States, and, you know, maybe something with AEW or WWE.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna ask you, is like, who like, does he fit sort of what both of those companies look for?
I think so. He could do both. I think definitely, you know, WWE, he'll be fine because he need to talk in WWE, right? Like, it's a, you know, it's about the character, and he has that, and wrestling wise, you know, he can go that style, that, you know, so I think, yeah, so I'm really high on that kid. I think he's going to be a big star in the future.
All right. Did you want to go first with your thumbs down?
Yeah, it's a little still recent has happened. I got to go with the Mr. Vince McMahon. Yo, VKM. Rocking the boat of happiness that we were riding for a good, you know, I don't know, what is it, a good 6 months, you know, good vibes.
This is a good one.
And came in and just rocked the boat on us, you know.
Here's a question. Do you think Vince, I asked this question in a couple of other places. What's the over under in Vince getting his hands dirty back in creative? And I said, if we set the over under at the day after the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view in Montreal, would you say he comes before that, after that, or he's just going to be fine? He's not, you know, he's not coming. Leave them alone.
If I remember correctly, I said before, right? I had a feeling before, but I hope not. I hope he's like, you know what? He's done good with, you know, Triple H, what he's done in the last 6 months. And he, you know, maybe he, I hope he reckoned, I probably was not the case, but because, you know, we all is legendary ego. I would hope he recognizes, like, you know, creative is not my thing anymore. You know, I'm just here to, you know, make the big sale, if that, you know, but we'll see. I hope not. These next couple months are going to be pretty big. So for WWE, and I'm pretty pumped for the Rumble, actually.
Yeah, me too.
It's going to be a fun show. I'm just going to watch it here with the family, but I can't make it out to Big Dave's this year. But looking forward to it. I don't have no predictions or anything, but you know, I think it's gonna be a fun show. It seems pretty good. Just by, you know, the matches seem okay. One match seems eh. I'm not really into Bianca Belair.
Yeah, that's a bad one. I don't even know why that's on the show.
Yeah. I'm sure it's gonna be all smoke and mirror stuff. So,
did you watch any of the Raw 30 show?
No, I did not.
So there's, I heard it was pretty good. I would say the first half of the show was really fun, and the second half was like every other meandering 3-hour Raw. But so DX is out, and obviously there's no Billy Gunn, and for some reason these dudes do not understand that in Billy Gunn's place is Kurt Angle. He just tagged along into the entrance and everything. So Kurt Angle is there, said he always wanted to be a part of DX.
That's pretty fun.
Then Imperium comes out. And you know, my fear is, you know, the DX from 97 and 98, where they're just going to make fun of these dudes and you know, kill their heat and everything. But of course, you know, that wasn't what the segment was for. So
didn't that just happen a couple years ago with FTR?
Yeah, that's kind of the worry is all the jokes and, oh, you guys, you know, you guys can't talk and just stuff like that. But they were fine. So Triple H does this joke where he's like, they want to fight, and Triple H doesn't want to fight. He's like, he's about to stand up to Walter, and he's like, oh, I'm retired, guys. And then Shawn Michaels is like, oh, I'm too old. And then everyone was like, no, you know, no, we're not going to do it. So then why can I not remember the tag team's name?
Fabian Aichner and
Montez Ford.
Street Profits.
Street Profits. Oh God, I was about to call them. What did you used to call Private Party? Party City. Party I was City. About to call them Party City. and then Seth Rollins came out. So Triple H is like, he's like, oh, what am I gonna do? He's like, this booking stuff isn't easy, you know. So he says that on mic, and so he's like, I was like, oh, he's like trying to make us think that Vince is going to come save the day. Mm-hmm. I was like, wouldn't that have been crazy? Oh, but God. Instead, it was a setup for Teddy Long to come out and make the match. Yeah. So that was it. But what I thought it was funny. It was Street Profits and Seth versus Imperium. And it was good. It was fine for, you know, good wrestling and, you know, good finish for the fans and everything. But I just thought, I was like, man, they're playing a little loose with the joke already. With not Triple H didn't mention Vince one time, but anybody who kind of knows that story was like, oh, he's kind of like subtly, you know, making you think that Vince is going to come out. So yeah. Anyway,
I heard them. I did hear that the legend segments were used to actually help the current stars, which felt
except different. For the poker stuff. The poker stuff was more the old school folks. It was a little bit of setup for Baron Corbin to get TV time.
But Baron Corbin, he's kind of the butt of the joke heel.
Yeah.
So he's okay to take something like that.
The Godfather said he didn't have Barry Corbin on his list. So, but it was, you know, like I said, the first hour and a half was really fun, and then it just got meandering. It was so long after that. Okay, so my thumbs down is. Now, this isn't necessarily pro wrestling, but it is pro wrestling adjacent. So AEW goes from 8 to 10 in prime time. And from 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock is Dana White's Power Slap. Now, if anybody has seen any of the clips of this stuff, it's really like lowest common denominator trash TV. And I can't believe that. And maybe, you know, maybe these people who are good at this or whatever, you know, maybe they think that it could help them make more money at this or whatever. I'm sure that's the point for them to be involved, but I know the money is really low for these guys, as far as how, you know, I saw someone who I don't remember if they were in the UFC prior or not, but they were like, yeah, 2,000 to show, 2,000 to win to be on this TV show.
Oh my God.
So, the reason, as we found out recently, is a woman who runs the, so this isn't Turner Sports or Warner Brother Discovery Sports. This is their entertainment division or something that created this show. The woman's name is Kathleen Finch, and she said that she wanted the show because she knows that AEW has a really good audience. And she thought that third hour of something like Power Slap would relate and they would be able to do a good third hour. And if anyone saw that rating, they know that it was not fantastic. I don't think it was like dreadful. It wasn't like dead on arrival kind of rating. Mm-hmm. A lot of people wanted it to be, but it made me think, like, you know, Tony Khan's got this renewal coming up, or you know, the TV rights are coming up, and I'm just like, oh my God, Kathleen Finch is going to cancel this Power Slap. And when they, you know, when they talk to Tony Khan about Dynamite, they're going to say, hey, you want a raise? Well, you're going to give us a third hour on Wednesday night. Uh-oh. Because Dynamite, I think, you know, usually they go off the air. I don't know exactly, you know, I don't know the average of what that rating is, but, you know, they usually go off the air. The audience is probably in the 800s range somewhere. Now, you add a third hour, it'll probably go down to the sevens or maybe even the high sixes. That's just sort of the cost of doing a three-hour show. But if her goal is to juice, just to get some juice for that third hour, that 10 to 11 hour, what else would give it juice other than the show that you're already showing? And maybe what it is it's an AEW reality show. That could be what that becomes. But that made me fear that the AEW third hour of Dynamite is coming. I hope not. I don't think Tony wants it, but, you know, again, the cost of doing business, you want to raise, here's what we need. And Tony wants to be a good partner. So I'm hopeful that that isn't it, but my thumbs down is to Kathleen Finch for, you know, putting this Power Slap stuff to, and you had an out. Dana White slapped his wife on camera. Yeah. That's like, you're like, oh, we were going to show your show, but dude, sorry, we can't do it now. It's just bad taste. And it's like, you had the opportunity and you still didn't take that opportunity.
As I was sitting on my area here to do the podcast, it was playing. And I was like about to turn on TV. I watched like a couple of slaps. I'm just looking at like, what the hell? Like you said, it's pretty low common denominator stuff. Yeah. Oh, and also this Love Island my wife was watching the other night. I was sitting there. I was doing some folding my clothes and she had it on. And it was like, this is the conversation I heard. It's like this guy and this girl, both two very attractive people. And it's like, you know, girl, you're looking good, girl. Oh, thank you. Mm-hmm. It was like, I was like, what the hell is this? You know, like, what is going on with the show?
Kathleen Finch's other show that I think I'm gonna guess that it's more popular than Power Slap is called MILF Manor. And it's a dating show where I think the MILFs are the ones who there's like young guys coming in, like,
yeah,
you know, like young guys coming in and they got to date the MILFs or something. Like, mm-hmm. There's some, I mean, it's like every other reality show these days, but that's probably more entertaining. I'd watch that over Power Slap in a second, though.
I had two friends that went to a MILF convention in Palo Alto.
A MILF convention. Wait, well, were they younger or older?
I didn't go, but no, they were young guys. This is like 10 years ago, 12 years ago, maybe.
Wow.
Yeah.
So no, it was like speed dating or something?
It's like, you know, like at a bar. I think it's like, you know, there's a bunch of old lady there and young guys there. And one guy had success, one guy didn't.
Man. Yeah. Pretty wow. Funny. I didn't even know that existed.
Don't worry. There's always something for everything, you know.
Yes, so. There. Yeah. All right. So we're going to talk about Dynamite here. The last 35 minutes of this show is an interview that I did with one of my really good friends, Ben Cruz. He's been on this show before, but the reason why I brought him back, other than he's just a really good guy and I love talking to him, is because he and two other hosts have their own wrestling podcast on the Ringer Wrestling Show feed, which is tremendous. And I'm so happy for him. But we talk about how it came to be. He's on the same feed as David Shoemaker and Peter Rosenberg, who I'm not a fan of, Pete Rosenberg. But David, you know, David does good work. David is also, I think David's their art director too. Like, he's really good with the graphics and such. So, yeah. but Ben, Brian Waters, I forget the other guy's name, Cal, I think his name is, the three of them, they do the wrestling. No, sorry. It's called the Wednesday Worldwide Show on the Ringer wrestling feed. And that's big time, you know, outside of websites like this. The Ringer Wrestling is just super popular. Like, they're able to do so much stuff because of that. You know, they got the Bill Simmons effect there. So check that out if you have the Ringer Wrestling show in your feed. Check them out on Wednesdays. If not, subscribe. Give them a download. Okay, so that'll be the last 35 minutes of the show. Let's talk about Dynamite. On paper, outside of the main event, I was like, I'm not sure there's one single match that I really want to watch on this show. And I would say, even though my, you know, what I was sort of looking forward to, or what I enjoy about wrestling, like, those matchups weren't there. Most of these matches were good enough for me, or maybe even slightly over-delivered. Like, I think I'm into Jungle Hook, man. Like, I think I really like that tag team of Jungle Hook, because now we get to see Hook wrestle. Like, we get to see Hook, yeah, like, every week. You know, he's doing, you know, young babyface stuff. So, but otherwise, like, I was like, but then you get that super emotional main event. You know, it was a good match. It's Jay Lethal. You could see the emotion in his face. So overall, I had a good feeling coming out of that show. Whereas going into it, before they added that main event, I was like, oh gosh, what is this show even going to be? So let's go over it. The first match is Jericho and Sammy Guevara against Action Andretti and Ricky Starks. And so Jericho and Sammy and Daniel Garcia get in the ring, and they do a little bit of choreography where they rip off some chaps. And Sammy's chaps go right in Jericho's face, just right to start the show. And Jericho could only smile. But they need to not do that choreography, unless it's just meant to be terrible, because they can't even, like, do the spin together and like rip the things off at the same time. It may be supposedly, but, you know, Jericho was on Dancing with the Stars, so we know he's got some rhythm. And you know, Sammy's he's a young Latin guy. I imagine that, you know, he's got some rhythm. So I don't know. Maybe I don't know what's going on there. All right. So this match I expected this match to be lots of high spots, fast, like, opener, you know, to get the crowd ready. Yeah. And it wasn't really that. It was kind of like a long babyface heat match with a comeback. And baby faces are going to win, but they get screwed in the end and they lose the match. So that's the story that it told. I thought Sammy Guevara did a really good job with what he was given. I'm still not into Andretti. You know, they gave him everything to start off his AEW career. And I don't know, he doesn't have the fire. And I think he kind of brings Ricky Starks down a little bit. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's been bringing Ricky Starks down a bit. He's a good athlete. I'll give him that. He does some cool athletic things, but I just could not get into this match at all. I wasn't feeling it right off the bat with the old, you know, the choreographed stuff. And every time there's a false heat, and there was a heat with Starks and a heat with Andretti. But every time Andretti would make the tag Ricky Starks was selling and make a tag to Andretti, there's, like, no reaction from the crowd, right? But it was the opposite when Andretti would tag Starks. That's who the star is, you know? Yeah. I didn't like the spot where Starks, he does that, you know, walk the tightrope deal, right?
Yeah, Michael Jackson stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's cool that he does that kind of stuff. But, like, the cutoff was Sammy Guevara running across and hitting the cutter. And all that did was get a big pop. It didn't get no heat. It would have been better if he would just came over and just, you know, chopped his legs out from under him, and he maybe crotched himself on the top rope, and then, you know, then they took advantage of that.
But I didn't like it either. Yeah.
You know, you do all that. The finish was poorly done with Andretti going for some kind of, like, torture rack breaker thing, but then Sammy Guevara gets to the on the apron, kind of stops it. Andre lets go Guevara, and then the referee Aubrey, she just goes over to look at Sammy, you know, for no apparent reason, just to, instead of like, hey, there's a guy on the apron, you're not going to say anything to him, what he did, you're just gonna go focus on Sammy, who just, you know, was just crumpled down and he looked fine. You just, and then of course that's when Garcia gets the baseball bat, hits Andretti, and then of course Sammy still has to pick him up for a move and still has to hit a finisher instead of just like
just
rolling
bat.
Him up, yeah. You know. That finish got heat, but I don't think it was the right kind of heat they wanted. I think they saw like the referee, you know, looking around like, whoa, what happened, dude? Like, you know, they buried her, and I don't know. I just was not into it. I feel like Starks had some real good momentum going, and this is, like you said, bringing him down a bit.
Brings him down a little bit. The thing I thought you're going to complain about is so Andretti does a tope, and he's aiming for Sammy. Sammy moves out of the way. I don't know if he pulled Garcia in. I couldn't tell.
That's what I thought he did.
But Garcia is the one who takes the shot. And so he flies back, and then Sammy gets in the ring and hits a dive, and Garcia is behind. And by the time Sammy hits the dive, Garcia, who just was supposed to sell this tope, is sitting up and clapping and smiling.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff in this match. I mean, we could be here all day on it, but it just, I was not feeling it. And I just kind of felt bad for Starks, where his momentum's going.
I did pop for Jericho's come on, baby, pin attempt. I always get a kick out of that. He pulls that out and makes me laugh every single time. But yeah, ultimately, I was a little disappointed in the opener. I thought it was going to be a little bit of a better match.
Yeah.
Jericho's kind of left for dead on the outside. Like, he's very much not a focal point in this entire thing.
That Rochambeau move on the floor, I think it's tacit. Oh, shit. If I remember correctly, it scared me too. I when I saw that, I was like, oh my gosh, you know. And but we must have missed something. Like, Garcia must have done something soon after that,
yeah,
to Starks, because where was he during all this?
Yeah,
so they missed that.
Then there was a Jay Briscoe video package, which was tremendous usage of his videos and then ROH archive videos. Great video package. Mm-hmm. Then we got Buddy Matthews versus Darby Allin. And this was an interesting match because we almost never see Buddy Matthews wrestle as a single. So, like, I'm trying to remember, you know, his style, and I can only go back to when he was in WWE and doing all the Kenny Omega stuff. Like, that's kind of what I remember. So, you know, just in this match, you realize him next to Darby. This dude is gigantic.
Yeah, he's massive.
Huge. Yeah. Oh, my God. But unfortunately for him, they did his entrance in the picture-in-picture.
Yeah. Well, I'm guessing time went long on the opener.
Well, they didn't even go to picture-in-picture in the opener, as far as I can remember.
Yeah, they didn't. They kept the They probably should have. Yeah.
I think they should have. And so Sting comes out with Darby. Match doesn't even start, and Julie already jumps on the apron, and Darby gets distracted and gets hit with the big knee. Lights turn off, which is, I'm going to say this every single time, the single worst gimmick in professional wrestling. And of course, I did like, I think it was Shivani who said, I'm so happy that Sting is there. Be scared for Darby. Or he said something like that. I was like, okay. And then, when the lights come back on, Malachi and Brody are kind of sitting there at the ringside. And all of a sudden, Ortiz comes in with the bat and starts cracking these dudes, and they go to the back. And so we got that whole thing of turning off the lights and seeing those just so Ortiz could crack these dudes, which I'm guessing is going to lead to a match, but I don't think it was on the itinerary that Excalibur read later. Mm-hmm. And then we got another picture in picture. So these poor dudes got the double picture in picture. That may be the first time for like a non-long main event where you get the double picture in picture. Darby reversed a superplex into a Scorpion Death Drop off the top rope. Went for the pin. Buddy's leg was under the rope. So he then grabbed the leg that was going under the rope to hook it. And Excalibur, I thought, was really smart. And he said, you know, if he didn't have to do that, if he didn't have to take that extra second, you know, Buddy might not have kicked out. And so I'm thinking like, oh yeah, because that was a really strong move.
Yeah,
it was a good call. As Excalibur is saying this, I'm thinking like, okay, Buddy's gonna sell for at least 3 or 4 more seconds just to kind of sell that moment. But he was up right before Excalibur was done with his sentence. Buddy is immediately on his feet. I was like, oh, the Excalibur did something really good, and it just didn't work out with the sync with the story there. Yeah. The finish is Buddy Matthews is sort of bent over the second rope. So his feet are on the side of the apron. His body is inside the ring over the second rope, and Darby hits him with the coffin drop for the win. So strong finish. I like every Darby match because he's a really good baby face. I think he sells really well, so you have some sympathy for him, and he wins in, you know, really strong fashion. So, you know, I like Darby as a baby face.
Yeah, this one I actually had high hopes for it, but I thought it missed something. I don't know, maybe it was the Zero Hero stuff, maybe it was, I couldn't connect with this one for some reason. I really like both guys a lot.
Yeah.
I don't like the booking of it. I don't like the idea that, you know, the House of Black Eyes came back after being off for a while, and now we have Buddy Murphy losing this singles match. Like, I wouldn't have them lose until maybe they challenge for the 6-man tag team titles, but I thought the booking was kind of off. And then with that, I didn't like that. And then what followed, I really didn't like, which we'll talk about now with the, I mean, Samoa Joe is fine, but the rest.
So Tony goes in the ring to interview Darby. And before Darby even gets to talk, Samoa Joe comes on screen and he wants to take everything from Darby. And this is a setup for next week, I believe, right? Is it for next week's Dynamite? So Samoa Joe versus Darby for Darby's title, not for Samoa Joe's title.
Yeah. And I'm guessing Joe gets it back here.
I don't know.
Because I'm thinking with Darby and wrestling like every show, defending the title, I'm guessing he might get it back. I don't know. I just have a feeling that Joe's going to get it back. And I kind of hope so, because I thought Joe was doing a great job as the TNT champion, the king of television, all that stuff. So Joe cut a great promo. I thought it was really good. And you know what I mean? Like Darby had no rebuttal. It was like, all right, cool. He's mad. You know, like, he just walks off. Like, it was a very strange thing. Like, it would have been better if they kind of placed this promo later in the evening where Joe's not talking, you know, he's talking directly to the camera to Darby, but not like directly to in the camera at Darby in the ring. I just thought it was kind of weird, but but should be an interesting match next week. I have a feeling that Joe's probably going to regain it.
Adam Cole video package. And then we get interesting match for Jungle Hook. I think a good team to put them up against as they're sort of climbing the ranks. But I didn't understand the Matt Hardy and Ethan Page stuff because I'm assuming it happens on other shows.
Yeah, apparently Ethan Page this is his idea, and he told Tony Khan, and Tony Khan let him book it. So he's been booking this stuff on Elevation or whatever.
Does he own Matt Hardy? Like, what is
it? Dude, AEW, someone owns someone. Like, there's always someone's contract that gets, like, you know, they own him. The Pirate Party gets owned by someone. You know, it's like the same old deal.
Yeah, so Matt Hardy came out to his music. And then Ethan Page was like, that's the wrong music. And then Isaiah Cassidy was with them, and he looked to be like rebelling. And Stokely was like, dude, you better put my chain on. And then he's like, oh, I'll tell you, I'll say it, you know, how you'll understand. You better put my chain on, dead ass. And then in the background, you see him putting the chain on. Yeah. So, I mean, I didn't understand that stuff. It just seems like,
where's Mark Quinn?
Yeah, I just feel bad for Private Party. Like, they're just lost in the mix, man.
It's been 3 years of nothing, you know. So, and it probably should be. I mean, honestly, you should probably they should be part of the house cleaning if I'm Tony Khan, because, you know, what are you going to do with them now?
They're still young. You know,
yeah,
you
let them go get over somewhere else. You know?
Yeah, I mean, that's true. That's definitely true.
Or move into Ring of Honor brand whenever that start. I guess it was going to happen soon. So, yeah, man, they could have.
Yeah. So, like I said at the top, Jungle Hook, I really like the team. It kind of gives, interestingly, it gives Jungle Boy a little bit more charisma. Like, you see his personality coming out a little bit, just like a smile here and there. Like, you can tell he's having fun. Like, he's having a lot of fun with Hook, because Hook, he gets a good reaction. Hook gets a great reaction. Yeah. They're winning these matches. Matt Hardy was wanted to win with the Twist of Fate, but Ethan Page makes him tag out. Then Page tries the Twist of Fate, but he can't get it. And then Jungle Boy snare traps him, and he can't get to the ropes, and he's got to tap out. So I don't, you know, this whole thing about, remember when Ethan Page was winning that tournament to get the shot? And then now he's doing this stuff, and it's like, you know, the up and downness of some of these guys who are kind of stuck in the middle has got to be really frustrating. And I guess you're just looking for somebody to stand out with something so that they can sort of make that decision for Tony Khan. But this isn't going to work for him if that's what he's trying to do.
No, I mean, this Matt Hardy, Ethan Page stuff is just going to end up back on Dark or Elevation. And, you know, who knows? We'll see the conclusion of it. Jungle Hook, I thought it was funny when Jungle Boy tweeted out like one more time again or something like that, made a joke of it, which I thought was pretty funny.
That's what Taz said at the end of the show too. He's like, they may not wrestle again. It was only supposed to be one time together. So
I think they make a good tag team, you know, but we just seen Jungle Boy in a tag team for like 3 years, and he just had his, you know, the idea was him beating Luchasaurus was his coming out party as a singles, and now,
well, at least he doesn't have that anchor anymore of Luchasaurus.
Yeah. I mean, there would be a much, I think they'll be even, I don't know if they will, they be more over, maybe. I think Hook does outshine Jungle Boy. Just
he's different.
He's different. Yeah. He's, you know, very unique. And Jungle Boy just drives me nuts when he comes out and just no fire, you know.
He does a little bit more smiling than like really firing up, but at least he's smiling now.
It's hard to watch Matt in there in the ring, man. He just looks like I'm hurting watching him. You know?
Well, because
like,
he used to be those guys when we started watching him.
Yeah.
Okay, family therapy session. Last week we were talking about how that was really the first, you know, first real miss of a promo. And I thought this was another miss. I was really disappointed in this. The whole gist of this session is the gun bros. They're trying to gain sympathy here. You know, they have a bad father and he wasn't ever home. The Acclaimed were telling them, you know, sort of where they went wrong. And then they told the Acclaimed that the Acclaimed were actually the bad guys in this scenario. Then they blamed Billy for not being there. And then Billy said, what would make you guys happy? And they said, we want the straps. And then they bailed. And that was it.
Yep.
None of the things that those four men do well, even Billy himself, none of the things that they do well, they got to do in this segment. It was poorly written, it was poorly acted, it was poorly shot. It was everything that AEW doesn't do well, and they put it all in a blender and spat it out with your hottest act in the entire company.
Very cheesy with the therapist, the cuts to her, you know, writing stuff down when they would
who
say,
was that woman? I'm wondering if she's her.
I'm guessing she might have been an indie worker, but you got a good idea. Last week should have been Scorpio Sky because he had experience.
That'd have cracked me up.
It's like they don't need to do this goofiness. They're supposed to, this is stuff that people used to just bag on WWE for doing, right? And they're
there was another WWE thing in at some point as we get there. I agree. It was like, come on, like we you guys can do so many better things than this. Frustrating. Renee and Adam Page had an interesting segment. Renee has become like part of my favorite parts of the show because her interview questions are like how a real interviewer would actually ask questions. Like, man, this is such a great thing to see on a professional wrestling show. She calls
Maybe she should do the Tony Khan scrums.
She should.
Blogs and all those people that just ask. Oh,
yeah,
man.
She should just ask all the questions that we all want to ask.
Yeah.
So she's with Hangman again, and she's like, you know, dude, what was up with that vague response from last week? And it was such a perfect question because that's how the audience was feeling. Like, this is a promo. This is promo time. Like, give us something. And he gave us nothing. So I love that question. So Adam Page, he keeps hearkening back to the day that Moxley knocked him out. And he said that he wants to knock Moxley out again. He wants to do it next week. And then poor Wheeler Yuta comes out and answers for Moxley and says, yes, he'll be there. He's not cleared right now. So we're going back to the being cleared and not cleared. And I guess Doc Samson, he could only have been used in one segment, so he couldn't actually tell us if Moxley was okay or not. And so Yuta then said that he wanted Paige on Friday, and Paige is like, all right, then I'm going to knock you out on Friday. And then Yuta, like, he tried his very hardest to make, like, an angry face, and then he just walked off.
I don't know why AEW does this. They always have someone saying, oh, this person's not medically clear, but then later on the graphic, oh, but next week this match is going to happen. Yeah. Right? This happened like 3 or 4 times already. I don't understand how people get to Hangman Page. The sensitive cowboy stuff, like, oh, yeah, no. I don't get it. I don't get it. There are people that love that guy, but – and then Wheeler Yuta just coming, popping up out of nowhere, like, you know, it's –
in my mind, he's like power walking. He hears Hangman's voice and he's like power walking to get to Hangman.
I knew you'd bring his name up. I knew you'd bring like just pops out of the, you know, out of the corner. Like, you know, I don't know. It's just dumb. Maybe they could have said, like, mentioned it in the promo with Renee, like, hey, you do have a match with Wheeler Yuta, who's also, you know, Moxley's training partner, tag team partner. But no.
All right, we had, I don't know, Brian Cage's best moment ever in a match against Bryan Danielson.
Probably his most logical match ever, I would say.
Yeah.
It was. Brian called the whole thing, and he made sure psychology-wise it made sense. You let Brian do it. Oh, my God.
Brian Cage did the powerful stuff. He did the impressive strength stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't see the sloppy stuff or like the
that powerbomb on the buckle that he nearly killed.
In my notes. That is definitely in my notes.
Pretty sloppy.
Early LaBelle lock to start the match, and Cage is Danielson's trying to end it early. Then you talk about it was actually a press slam, and then he threw Danielson. Into the buckle, and Danielson kind of landed like sideways on it. That looked rough. If you remember from last week, the whole idea of this match was Max wanted him to break Danielson's arm, so he's trying. It was more shoulder because he did the wrist lock, and that I think that's probably more a little bit more shoulder related, and I think that's what actually when Danielson got hurt, it was more shoulder.
That was that was the goal. That's the story, you know. Shoulder.
So, like I said, great power moves by Cage. Lots of great suplexes, and then great reversals. Great wrestling by Danielson, and he actually wins with a surprise roll up. And so then Cage, you know, knowing that Max said, "Hey, you know, I don't really care if you win or lose, but you know, you need to break this dude's arm." So he goes to the outside, gets a chair, puts Danielson's arm in it. And he's trying to break his arm. Then MJF comes out and he puts his arm in a chair, rams Danielson into steel post. Then he goes to Pillmanize the arm and he's going to jump off the top rope with the arm stuck in the chair. Takeshita comes in for the save. MJF scoots out, but Takeshita took it out on Cage. And then we went to commercial. When we came back, Renee was with Doc Samson. And Doc Samson gave us like this long medical term of what Danielson's problem was. And he says that he can't wrestle. And Danielson's screaming at him. And he says, I can. I wrestled a 60-minute match with a separated shoulder one time. And so then he cut a promo on Max and saying that mask that you're talking about, it's just fear of being exposed. And that was a segment.
Yeah. I love the Danielson portion of that promo. It was great. Doc Sampson. Now we know that he has no credibility as a trainer, because when he says, oh, no, you can't wrestle, you're hurt. No, I'm going to wrestle. All right, shoot, next week you're going to wrestle. Like, then again, he did tell Matt Hardy he's okay to go on, you know, continue a match that they got
brain splattered. Oh, my God.
But like I said earlier, this is Brian Cage's most logical match he's had, because Brian Danielson was calling the whole thing. I love the story of Danielson. You know, he's using his speed and quickness to quickly move in and out of moves, like getting out of holes, lock on submission holes, never staying tight with Danielson and Cage, locking him up. But finally, when Cage got the advantage, it was with his power, right?
Yeah.
And with the power, the press slam. I don't understand why he just have Cage you know, press slam him and like maybe do like the little clothesline on the top rope deal. The whole press slam into the corner was nasty, man. That scared the crap out of me.
Yeah.
I kind of got irritated. He didn't go for the cover there. Because that looked brutal, right? That was nasty.
That's
the German suplex. I thought
he loses matches.
The German suplex on the shoulder. I thought, oh my God. Holy shit. But that was designed for Danielson. Wanted that.
Yeah.
He's such a great seller. I got for like a second or two. And then they started telling the story about the shoulder. The buckle bomb thing was just, oh man, just back of his Danielson's back of his head hitting the top rope like that was just nasty. That was a pretty brutal match for Danielson. You know, it's still so weird about AEW. They have managers, they don't use managers. I mean, other than maybe a pop up, like they'll pop up on the apron, do a little distraction, but like, they don't do anything. There's no interaction with the client and the manager. Even Brian Cage is just not even paying attention. Chris Donna could be out there, could not be out there.
Yeah. Right?
No feeding to the manager during the heat. Maybe just, you know, put him on the ropes, a little choke, let the manager come by, a little slap for some heat or a choke himself. Or, you know, same thing with Stokely, same thing with Julia Hart. It's just as a former manager,
but yeah, like, they're just for distractions.
It's just, yeah, that's all they're kind of there for. It's just a pop up, and I don't know, pretty frustrating there. But overall, you know, Danielson did a great job with Cage, featuring his strengths, and I love Danielson's promo. I thought that was really good.
All right, then we got Toni Storm and Ruby Soho, and I liked the aggressive, meaner Toni Storm. It feels like she has a little bit more charisma as a heel than she did in her AEW stint as a babyface. She played possum on a knee strike to the nose to kind of a callback to when she had broken her nose. And she's playing possum, and Ruby's like waiting. Finally, referee's like, no, you know, give her some time. And then she drills her with a hip attack in the corner. And then we got the other WWE moment on this show, which is a total WWE distraction finish, where all of a sudden Toni Storm is in control. Britt Baker, who was pulled out of this match, was supposed to be in the match. Then she gets pulled out of the match. They don't tell us why. She shows up on the ramp. Her music is playing. And Toni Storm is distracted. Ruby hits the Destination Unknown to win the match. And then Britt leaves. And that was it.
Yeah. Yeah. Lame. I like Toni Storm's working here. Thought she was pretty good. She should call that move the hips that don't miss or something like that. You know? Yeah, it was what it was. And the finish was, like you said, right out of the distraction finish. I don't like when music plays, someone comes out, they get, you know, we've been complaining about that for, I don't know, like 20 years now.
Yeah.
I don't know why Britt was hurt either. But then again, I don't even know why it was actually a three-way match originally. Like, why?
Yeah.
Didn't seem to have a reason for it, making it a three-way. But,
and, you know, we'll see where it's the originals versus the WWE women or whatever they're trying to call this. I don't even know if Saraya and her group even has a name.
It's like the Originals or the Invaders, I guess.
I mean, that's invaders. I called them the Invaders, but
they're signed, so they're not really.
Yeah, they're all the same company technically.
They get but then you have the person. The home team sympathizers and Ruby Soho, and then you got.
And then Sheeta is on the bad side.
Sheeta trying to figure out how to act out an emotion. I know it's weird.
I mean, I like the recognition that okay, Saraya's not getting over the way that we thought she would, and probably if they would have thought a little bit more about what her promos were, that they would have realized, yeah, that's not going to work. But they pivoted, which is great. But now we need to see. I want to see some more here.
We'll, how do you mess up? Going. Paige's return to the ring.
I feel like WWE messed up Daniel Bryan's return after all those years at WrestleMania.
I mean, how do you mess this up? Like, Saraya has always been popular.
Yeah.
And you know why? Because how it got messed up is there was no editing of her promo. No one, they just thought she can just go and do it, you know? Oh, you have the, you know, you could do it, but a lot of people, some people do need writers. Some people need someone to kind of look at what they're going to do and edit them and say, you know what, this kind of sounds like, you kind of sound like a bitch here. You know, I don't think this is going to get you with our fan base. It's not going to work. Let's go a different way. I don't think anyone ever gave her that direction. And she just came out and she had to say that line, like, you know, basically big time herself. And yeah, the AEW fans are like, well, screw this chick, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So we get MJF doing an interview. He's complaining about Daniel Bryan. He's like, Daniel Bryan, you got everything. You got family. You got money. Why do you want to take the one thing that I cherish? You know, why do you want to take my belt away? And he says, the reason you do is because you have a hole in your soul and you are trying to fill it. He says, if you keep trying to take my belt away, I'm going to give you something that's worse than physical pain. It is mental pain that will leave a scar. And he's got a chosen guy to inflict pain on Bryan Danielson next week. That gentleman is somebody that you've worked very closely with in the past. Mm-hmm. One, Timothy Thatcher.
Yeah. Yeah, this is definitely a match that Bryan Danielson requested. He's always wanted to wrestle Timothy Thatcher. I remember Marcus Jacobson, APW promoter, when he did extra work for WrestleMania here, there was a 31 in Santa Clara.
31. Wasn't he with Rusev?
Rusev, yeah, he was on the stage with Rusev's entrance. And he was talking to Danielson in the back, and Danielson, he's talking to APW. Of course, Bryan Danielson was a trainer at APW, and all he wanted to do was talk about Timothy Thatcher. And he's like, yeah, I watch his matches. I'm sure there must have been some kind of trade, you know, obviously with Darby Allin doing work with Noah. And so I'm guessing this is a one-time deal, you know, per shot basis, kind of like when Jeff Cobb did stuff as well. But it's going to be a hell of a match. I'm excited for it. You know, definitely a match I always wanted to see. And Tim, I guess he plays that role well of the guy that's going to cause injury. He's the, he's going to further injure the shoulder. So he's the assassin there. But it's going to be great. Tim's awesome. Danson's awesome. It's going to be, I hope they get like fucking 25 minutes, honestly.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And then for Rampage, we have Paige versus Wheeler Yuta. And they didn't make it clear, but I'm guessing the Pure title is not on the line in this match.
No. Is he Pure champion? I don't even know.
I think he's Pure champion. I think he beat Garcia at the last pay-per-view.
Is Claudia going to be out there?
Oh, good question.
Yeah.
Hobbs will be in action. Or
the next chapter.
It says it's going to be in action, but then they said they're going to do the next chapter. So I don't know if they got there.
I just think it's now his tagline. The next chapter of the Book of Hobbs, and he's going to come out with his book.
And then Jamie Hayter and Emi Sakura. And you get Adam Page on Rampage. So he's a main eventer. It's not a big match for him. So maybe that will help the ratings. But otherwise, I'm like, I don't know. I don't know if people
Jamie's
are going
to. He's popular, but I mean, we'll see. I think they've been doing like, 400 or something. I'm going to say it's going to be like 550.
They'll probably take that.
I think so. I think there'll be a little boost there. Maybe.
And then on Dynamite, Adam Page against Moxley, Danielson versus Thatcher, the Acclaimed are going to be in action, and Darby Allin versus Joe for the TNT title, and it will be no holds barred.
Oh, God.
And then we had our main event, Mark Briscoe versus Jay Lethal.
You know what? I'm sorry. Sorry to cut you off there, bro. I don't think Joe is winning. I forgot about Wardlow coming back for revenge for his little haircut.
That's a good point.
So I think, now you're right. I don't think so. I think Darby's entertaining.
Yeah. Mark Briscoe and Jay Lethal. So Ian, Rick Abani, and Caprice Coleman replaced Tony Schiavone and Taz for the announcing. Mm-hmm. And Jay Lethal, before they even started the match, this dude is emotional. Mm-hmm. Mark was keeping it together. I was really impressed. I was like, man, how can you keep it together? You know what, this match, it didn't remind me of the match, but it reminded me of a similar situation when Bret Hart finally had his first match in WCW after Owen had passed, and he chose Chris Benoit to be the person he wrestled. So this is very important to Mark. It's very important to Jay Lethal. This mattered to them, more than being in the main event slot of the show. Like, this was really a good, it was a really good match. These guys are really good with each other. They've probably done a version of this match a bunch of different times. Mark won with the Jay Driller. Yeah. And at the end of the match, you had a lot of the talent on the stage, and Mark got to, he got to put that belt up and express himself right there at the end of the show before they went off the air. Really good, really classy.
Very classy.
I wonder if you don't know this story, if you're going to stay tuned in to the main event. I hope so.
Me too.
Because I thought it was worth it. It was really good.
Yeah, they got me going. I had to fight back the tears. The one that during the video, Jay Briscoe early in the night, which was fantastic, and then the match too when I saw Lethal breaking up out there. Before Mark came out. Then when Mark came out again. But from my understanding, I forget where I heard it or read it on the podcast. Someone said that, he's been holding up pretty strongly, they're
very religious.
Religious. And, if you're very religious, it's people, people accept the next phase of your life or where you're, all that kind of stuff. So I think, I don't know. I hope now. I mean, is he signed now? I know he's signed to Ring of Honor, but is he going to be on the AEW roster?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know if this sounds exploitive, but I think there's something there though for it. You take Mark Briscoe off television for a while. He makes a big comeback later in the year. And I think he might be able to, be a main event challenger for the title,
mm-hmm.
It could be a big deal, maybe a year from now or something like that. But because Mark Briscoe's talented as a wrestler. Let's just talk about his wrestling. Like, he's a really good wrestler. He's a great character.
Yep.
The whole I mean, they're fun. They're a great team, man. And it still doesn't feel real, but this was definitely closure. I thought Ian Rick and Bonnie was awesome in this match. He is so good. Caprice was great too. But yeah, 100% class act from AEW for sure.
All right. So we're going to toss it to my interview with Ben, and then we're going to come back to wrap up this show. So check it out. Me and Ben talking about podcasting, talking about, being guys who wanted to get into radio and weren't able to get into radio and sort of saw the picture and stuff. So it's a really good conversation. We talked about his podcast too on the Ringer Wrestling Show feed. So here we go. Me and Ben. I want to welcome back someone who's been on this show a few different times now. None other than Ben Cruz from the Ringer. Ben has a new podcast on the Ringer Network called Wednesday Worldwide, and we're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk a little bit of Royal Rumble as we head to the road to WrestleMania here. But Ben, what's going on?
Double G, thanks as always for having me on. I thought we were going to talk about James Wiseman trades this whole show when you first invited me. I'm a little thrown off here. You want to talk wrestling?
Our other passions that connect our Bay Area sports. So yeah, the Warriors are very much a topic for us generally. But yeah, you know, at some point, I'm sure we're going to have to talk James.
We'll squeeze it in. Yeah, we'll squeeze it in.
So I think the most fascinating thing about this new podcast that you're doing, and you know, for people like us who are content creators, podcasts are very much a passion, especially early on, because you're just doing it for the love of the game. You know, it's really hard to sort of monetize when you start. Totally. And I remember when I first started doing it, very influenced by a few different people. One being the head of the company that you work at, Bill Simmons, and the other, which is Brian Alvarez and Dave Meltzer on this website. And there were a couple others out there. I think I mentioned before Adam Carolla was one, just because of the way he kind of did it. You know, from the starter kit podcast, and he just blew it into this entire network. But you know, we always think about when you do podcasts, because you listen to a lot of shows and you go, oh, you know, I could add something to this, or I could give this perspective. And to me, I was like, I would love to work with a few different people. I would love to work for a few different people. One of those people for me was Dave Meltzer, and I got to meet him and I got to become friends, and it just kind of worked out that way in this weird way. The other one was Bill Simmons. So here you get to do a pro wrestling podcast on Bill Simmons's network. Like that, like, I don't think people understand like how big that is to you because of your fandom and just sort of how you saw yourself as a voice.
No, I appreciate you bringing that up and saying it that way. I mean, look, most of us who are in the sports podcast space or are fans of it or listen to it, I mean, whether you're a fan of him or not, Bill Simmons is at the top of that list, right? He was one of the OGs, and again, is the reason a lot of people are doing what they're doing now, whether you want to admit it or not. And I mean, it's been pretty surreal the last week or so to, I don't think I've even fully wrapped my head around it, to be honest with you. I've talked to you about this because we're friends, but it's still very much a pinch me moment, just prepping for the shows that we're doing, or even, I mean, let's take it a step even more forward, right? Mm-hmm. David Shoemaker, who is our wrestling North Star over at The Ringer. Yeah, I've been listening to him for years.
Yes.
Right. And for now it to be a situation where we are peers, where he's asking me if I want to come on his show, and I have to ask him if he wants to come on our show, and he'll say yes. It's very much this. I still feel like I'm going to wake up, to be honest with you. I don't mean to come up like super dramatic. Like it's podcasting, right? It's not super glamorous or anything, but at the same time, for some of us, it is, you know, and I'm very, very fortunate, very, very blessed to work with the people that I work with and to have known the people that I've known to help me get to this place. Honestly, I'm very cognizant of that there's no way in hell I do this by myself or just based off of what I know and what I do. So there are a lot of people that I need to thank.
And to let's take it to a little bit of a further extent. And you know, again, this is a passion project for us to be able to get her. I come from radio. People who listen to this show know I come from a radio background. That's what I wanted to do when I was younger, was to get into radio. And then when I realized that radio was like the slowest moving industry of all time, I was like, okay, I don't want to go to like this really, really small market and have to kind of, you know, break in there. And luckily we live in where we live, and I was able to get into tech pretty early. So that was, you know, that was lucky on my end. But at the same time, because of who we are in not only just wrestling, but just in like this small niche Bay Area sports media market, where you get to hear voices of different races that maybe you don't hear in other places, right? So, you know, I'm half Asian and half Mexican. And for me to go somewhere like KMBR and not see anybody who looks like me, like that's kind of, it's not alarming because we grow up with that, knowing that we're sort of the people who just fit in. But to be able for you, like for me, one of the proudest things for me is like, you know, I get to see you do this thing that we've been talking about forever. And we kind of share our passions and our dreams and what we want to do. And yeah, you've been able to network, especially in the Bay Area, tremendously. And, you know, been able to join a great company in this media. As much as we love podcasts, no one loves podcasts more than Bill Simmons. He created a damn company around it, right? That's the place you get to work at, which is fascinating to me.
I mean, you and I share that KNBR connection, which I don't think we talk about enough, actually. Obviously, you worked there. I interned there and actually got my start, my career start there as an intern. And again, being in that building, you know this, there's not a lot of people who look like us, right? You're half Asian. I'm full Filipino. And being there, you're one of one, right? And you assume that you're not going to end up behind the mic. Like what we're doing right now, 10 years ago, however long we started this, there's just no world in which you and I are having these conversations. That's just the reality of it back then, right? And now where it's just the podcasting space has opened up opportunities for everyone. And it doesn't matter what race you are, what gender you identify with, right? It's everyone. If you can talk, you can talk. And that's what I love about it. And I love about this avenue in this space that, again, at the beginning, it was Bill Simmons. You know, I guess you could throw Joe Rogan in there, you know, Mark Maron, all these kind of foundational pieces, Ira Glass, you know, Corolla, who you threw in earlier, who is, you know, still him and Simmons's podcast, like early are ingrained in my brain. I think you and I talked about this. So it's, again, I'm very, every day when I wake up and like I kind of have this mic, I'm looking at this mic at my desk, I'm baffled. You know what I mean? I have that moment every day where I'm like, I don't know if I'm supposed to be here, right? And I hope that, you know, your kids who've gotten to know who are awesome, and you know, as my son and daughter grow up, I hope that they don't have those limitations and those thoughts. Absolutely. Because I hope it's just as a society we kind of grow out of that. And that you and I were the only ones that kind of had to just have to have those wondering thoughts. You know what I mean? So, it's thanks for asking this, man. It's very introspective, which I honestly haven't done since we've kind of started this whole thing.
I mean, I think it's necessary, right? Because, you know, my podcast isn't even, this podcast doesn't have the same reach as your new podcast, Wednesday Worldwide, which I'm going to ask you a couple questions about in a second here. But the fact that you do have now this space to talk, and you know, who's this for those who don't know who Ben Cruz is now, you do some research, but at the same time, it's not like this was just handed to you. Like, how many places did you go and did you get starts and did you sort of like go, oh, this might be it, and then it wasn't it, and you still had to go find your thing? Like, you know, we talk about The Athletic, because it's a place where we both, you know, love the app and stuff, and read about the Warriors like we were just talking about. You know, I'm sure at some point you were like, oh, The Athletic, that might be the place where I sort of, you know, really, really dig in with my career. But it doesn't turn out to be that way. And you've gone through some startups as well, like I have. And, you know, I still work for a startup that's not in the podcasting space, but still in the tech space. And but now, you know, this is really a spot, and you know, crossing fingers that you can just really, really dig in and grow and really be a part of the fabric of At the Ringer.
I mean, I hope so. And you know, I'm sure we'll talk more about The Ringer specifically. But I mean, just kind of scaling back and stepping back from an even more big picture standpoint, I mean, like you don't see a lot of Asians in the sports space, period.
This is why Kawakami is so important to me.
Oh my, Tim Kawakami. Obviously, I produced his pod, you know, back in the early Athletic days, and I'm still very friendly with him today. He's still one of my mentors who I look up to.
He's so influential.
He guided me through a lot, right, and just kind of taught me a lot of the things that we have to jump through as an Asian person in this space. There's just extra steps, right? Because I remember having this conversation with Andy Liu, who you know over at Light Years and does an amazing job over there. That's my guy. And for whatever reason, you know, I think in the sports space, Asians still aren't taken as seriously as everybody else. It's just kind of a reality that I've embraced and have dealt with since the beginning of my sports career, if you will. Yeah. I remember having a conversation with my neighbor literally a couple months ago when I first got this job at the Ringer, and I was like, oh yeah, I work in sports. And he's like, oh, what do you do? Are you an engineer? I wish I was getting that engineer bag. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
But no, I just read too many articles and know too much about sports that might not, you know, be beneficial. But
yeah.
You know, I'm very lucky to be now where I am, because again, you and I met over when we were doing stuff at Blue Wire.
Yeah. Right?
And even that, what was that, like 4 years ago now, three, 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And the space is still, it's now more open. I think it's now more embracing of different types of cultures and people. I still don't see a lot of people who look like you and me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And Andy Liu's and Tim Kawakami's.
Absolutely.
And
need more.
It's tough because I think there's, you know, the stereotype of who we are kind of as a culture, you know, just quieter and more demure, if you will. And you know, that's a depiction comes from a depiction in Hollywood and everything else. We can kind of go down this rabbit hole. It's a very deep rabbit hole that I'm sure is not
unwilling to wild out like Skip Bayless.
Totally. Exactly. Right. Like the anti-Skip, we're the anti-Skip Bayless.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. If we were Asian cowboy fans, you just got to take it and you move on. But no, I mean, to kind of think about where you and I first met, again, at Blue Wire and the rest of the journey, there's, to be honest, there came a point where I thought there was no way in hell I would ever be given an opportunity to host a podcast.
Yeah.
I would do it for fun. You and I would do it, and it would reach who it needed to reach, right? You were on Two Jabronis with me and Jeremy, which we very much appreciated. You reciprocated. We were in a fight game with you, and you know we've done Top Rope Nation with our friend Ryan Drosty. Mm-hmm. But that was it. And it's very few and far between that, you know, we are given this opportunity, and I don't take that lightly. Kind of with this new opportunity over at the Ringer, and it's still, again, I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop in some way, because I think that's the Asian person inside of me where you're like, the other shoe's going to drop and we got to figure it out. You know what I mean? Like this is too good to be true.
So let's talk about your new show, because I know you had been on David's show a couple of times before, and then this new show Wednesday Worldwide dropped. By the time this show comes out, I think episode 2 of your show will be out. So how did the opportunity, like I know now The Ringer has Monday through Friday wrestling podcast, which is, that's an investment into something that you and I sort of, you know, we still get a little flack here and there for being, you know, a lesser than sport, a non-important, you know,
sure.
We wasted our time, you know, with this stuff. But so what was the strategy behind The Ringer going 5 days? And then how does your show kind of fit in with the rest of the shows in the Ringer Wrestling Network?
Yeah, I mean, when we were looking at kind of the scope of what we were doing on the wrestling side, you know, at one point we were offering 3 shows and you know, one of those shows had to unfortunately change, and then we were down to 2 shows. We were down to the Masked Man show, which is hosted by David Shoemaker and Kazim Femuide, an excellent show, and Cheap Heat, which is with Peter Stat Guy Greg and Dip. And I remember having this conversation with David, and we were literally like, hey, what if we just doubled up? You know, we just do Mask Man show twice a week, like Cheap Heat twice a week. Like, okay, great. That'll double our output. And then there was still, and we kind of mapped it out so it kind of spread it out evenly mm-hmm. for everybody, right? You know, Mondays and Thursdays for Masked Man, Tuesdays, Fridays for TP. We're like, great. Well, what about Wednesday? Should we do anything on Wednesday? And, you know, a couple of years ago, you probably would have said no, right? Because it's, I don't know, you probably need a break. But there's wrestling, there's so much content,
yeah.
right? If you just watch WWE and AEW, right, just the four main shows, that's like 11 hours of content.
Yeah, I know,
right? That's excluding Impact, New Japan, MLW, right? All these excellent avenues. So we're like, all right, let's start. And I mean, if you look at kind of the wrestling media landscape, there are sites that do it every day. There are sites that do it multiple times a day. There are sites that do it after every show, right?
Yeah.
And we looked at ourselves and we're like, we have a lot of people who know wrestling here. Why aren't we doing it every day? So I just threw it out there on you know, when I was looking at the Wednesday site, I was like, hey, there's this slot. Like, why don't we fill it? You know, it could be me and whoever. I put that out there as kind of a throwaway comment. Cut to a couple weeks later, we're doing a bunch of test pods with me, Cal Davenport, who's a senior editor at The Ringer, and one of the amazing producers we have at The Ringer, Brian H. Waters, who's a wrestling encyclopedia if I've ever met one. And you know, we got a shot, man, and that's what we're doing now. Our you know, debuted last week, which again we are still very very shocked at, but it's been incredible, and it's just something that we talk about all the time just in our Slack group chats, and we're just kind of bringing that, you know, to the mics. So it's we're here Wednesday worldwide.
So obviously The Ringer, the NBA stuff and Bill stuff, you know, Russillo, those are like next level downloads when it comes to the popularity. So with your show, like, how do you guys define success? Is it only downloads? Is it online engagement? Is there something else internally for the three of you as far as defining, like, how do we know we're doing a good job?
I think what we want to do is just really, because again, there's so much content out there and we just want to amplify the other Ringer wrestling content that we're doing, because obviously if we're going every day, some of that might get lost. Yeah. And look, Cal, Brian, and I understand where we are kind of in the hierarchy of the Ringer wrestling world, right?
Yeah, David's had the slot for many years, right, already.
Dave is Roman Reigns.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We gravitate around that, and we gotta earn that. We gotta earn our keep. So I think in terms of defining success, it's can we amplify what those guys are doing? Because they're doing amazing work, and in what has become a very, very crowded combat sports space. I'm sure you know this too, just kind of looking at numbers and everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, we realize we have to pay our dues a little bit and just say, hey, like, we can get off our own takes, but also, did you hear this? You know what I mean? We have a segment on our show called They Said What? And it's literally reacting to a take that, you know, either David, Kaz, Peter, Greg or Dibba said. And it's because, look, there's a lot of content out there. We get it. It might have like, you know, flown over your head. You might not have heard it. We want to make sure that you hear and catch everything that we're spitting out, you know, on the Ringer Wrestling Show. So.
And I think that works for the audience. Like, historically, Bill Simmons and Cousin Sal, their entire show is a giant inside joke now, just because I've been listening to these guys talk about football every Monday morning for, I don't know how long. It's been over 10 years for sure.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
so,
for sure.
You know, and so when they make a joke about, and then one of the funny ones was when Bill Simmons used to do the Andrew Luck, Andrew the Giant voice. Like,
yes.
Like, if you haven't Incredible. Listened to that show ever, then you're like, what? I don't even know what this means. But because you have such a regular listenership, you're just anticipating Andrew the Giant segment And then you put it two and two, you know, Bill's a 70s wrestling kid. And
yeah,
you know, so that stuff is fun. So I think for you guys, because, you know, your listenership, you guys can be inside, you can have takes. Oh, yeah. And plus having a David Shoemaker take that you analyze, like that's kind of out there already because he has a high popularity. So that the audience is like, oh, yeah, you know, we know David. So that's an interesting way to do it. Now, when it comes to obviously the Ringer, you guys have folks who have sources and you know, I'm sure David, you know, he's inside with a lot of stuff. So is there opportunities for you guys, like as you sort of flesh out the show, you know, Kofi Kingston's doing some stuff. You know, I saw Kofi Kingston was on Fightful, you know, with Sean Ross Sapp. Is there a possibility for you guys to even start bringing in folks from WWE, folks from AEW, folks who, you know, are known wrestlers to then interview?
Oh, totally. I mean, I think it just depends on, you know, who it is, but we are, I don't think the thing I love about working with all the hosts over kind of on the Ring of Wrestling side is there's no egos. You know what I mean? It's literally, that's why we went every day, is just, hey, we can make sure that no stone is left, you know, unturned. And look, if someone's available on this day, let's run it. You know what I mean? And I think that's been very, very helpful in terms of kind of booking, because like these guys and girls are very, very busy. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to align schedules. And, you know, obviously with us having only one show under our belt so far, we haven't had anyone on yet, but I hope and think that that's coming down the road. Obviously I will, you know, part of my job, you know, on the Ring of Wrestling side is to like funnel a lot of those great guests and top tier guests to David and Kaz and to Peter and Greg, because they've been there before. But I do think that there's an opportunity for us over at Wednesday to do our thing as well. So I'm very, very excited for that opportunity if and when it comes.
Yeah, no, it's a great opportunity, great landscape, great environment for you guys to build and build and build and build. And I know that that's what the Ringer knows how to do is build podcasts, man. That like that's your guys' bread and butter. Okay, so we are gonna talk a little bit of wrestling here. I did want to make it about a little bit about content creation, a little bit about podcasting, because I think, you know, as you do this for a long time, your audience is interested in some of the things that you're interested in, right? So my audience at the Fight Game Podcast, I'm sure they know that I'm just this like person who just wants to create stuff and is very interested in doing shows and connecting people and making sure that Dave can talk to this person, because maybe technologically he doesn't have the know-it-all to do it, and I can sort of, you know, bridge that for us. So I love this conversation. We could probably talk about this for hours, and we do.
You know, right, right, hang out. Yeah,
but yeah. Let's circle back to Royal Rumble here. Do you have any? I would say, do you have any predictions? Who you think is like the smart money is on in the men's and women's Royal Rumble, and then who do you want to win those matches?
Okay, so who do I think is going to win the men's Rumble? Let's start there. I think it's going to be Cody. I mean, I don't think you run all these vignettes and spend all this money creating these video packages for someone who's not going to win the Rumble, or at least be in the final four. Right. So the smart money is on him. And I haven't seen the betting odds yet because I haven't gotten that email, but I assume he's the heavy favorite.
I would assume that too.
I would just have to assume. And I don't blame it. Who do I want? I mean, I think you already know the answer to this. If you know me, it's Dwayne.
Yes.
It's Hobbs himself, The Rock, coming back to win it, because again, that would be, at this point, I feel like that's a swerve because all the reports we've heard. So let me step back a little bit, right? If Rock were to win, if that was the report 6 weeks ago, you'd be like, I kind of expected that. since then, the last 6 weeks have been really steering us away from picking The Rock.
Yeah,
he doesn't have time.
Yeah,
and look, it makes sense. The man is busy. He's running a tequila company. He's running an energy drink company. DC's trying to screw him out of all his Black Adam royalties. I don't know, man, but I want The Rock at this point. They've swerved it so much where I want Dwayne to win it.
He's got. So, I mean, the XFL's coming too. Our Las Vegas. We're claiming Las Vegas as our team.
We are, because of proximity. I made all of us do that. So that's where I'm at with who I want to win and who I think will win. Who on the women's side, I don't see how anyone other than Rhea Ripley wins it.
Yeah,
I mean she's been incredible. Honestly, two of my favorite things last calendar year, were the Christmas and Thanksgiving videos of her and Dom invading the Mysterio house online. Again, wasn't on TV, just online.
Yeah.
They showed up on Thanksgiving Day and on Christmas Day, did crazy numbers on Twitter. It was one of the funniest things. You know, and she has this whole mommy thing going on with him. I think she's also just a badass and she deserves to win.
Yeah.
So she's almost who I think will win, who I want to win. So for the sake of this conversation, I will say she is who I think will win, who I want to win. I forever have a soft spot for Liv Morgan. Obviously she had her moment
this year.
She's
another one of the favorites. Yeah.
Yeah. And she had her moment this year where she won the title and she cashed in. But I think that would be friggin' incredible for her. But I on some level I also think it's gonna be Rhea. Like I also want it to be Rhea.
Yeah, I'm with you. You know, I agree with you about the Christmas video. You know the beef that I have with the Thanksgiving video?
Please.
Okay, so I'm also half Mexican.
Okay.
Mama Mysterio, she's not getting punked in her own house.
That's true.
She's not getting punked. The shoe is coming off. The chancla is coming off. And that thing's getting chucked at Rhea's face. Like Rhea's going to have to do some duck and cover because the chancla is coming out. And so, but in the second video, they fixed that though, right?
They did.
Mama Mysterio was
180'd.
Yeah, she's like, I'm no fool. I'm no punk in my own house.
I think the Thanksgiving one, they just needed to rope us, because I think we all assumed that they were going to fight back, right? Like, Ray wasn't just going to take that in his house. Mama Mysterio was not going to take it. And they did. So it was a little shocking.
Yeah.
I pitched this to the Wednesday guys during one of our test runs. They need to run that segment every holiday, right? Like, I know they're probably building to some sort of Dom Ray match at Mania, but if they don't, run it for a whole year every holiday. I want to see Memorial Day. I want to see the Memorial Day barbecue, the 4th of July Day barbecue.
Yeah,
throwing a Valentine's Day if you want to go sooner. You know what I mean? Every holiday, just run this segment,
dude.
3 minutes, and I think it'll hit every time, and it'll just keep getting funnier.
And Dom's getting over, man. Like, you remember when we went to Raw? Like, he was getting crazy heat when we were there. And my buddy Ed, he was saying, like, we were talking about the new WWE game coming out, and I was like, oh, I wonder who's going to be on the cover. And I saw Cena was on the cover. And you know, how NBA 2K sometimes will do like the three different covers. And I was I wonder if they're gonna. I wonder if they're gonna do like a younger star cover as one of the three. It doesn't look like it. I think all three covers are Cena.
It's just Cena, yeah.
But he was like, no, it's got to be Dom. He's like, it's got to be the, mullet Dom. And I was like, oh yeah, I want to see like Orale Vato Dom on the cover of
prison post prison Dom on 2K23. Dom's seen some stuff, man.
Exactly.
He's no longer a kid. I love it.
All right, so The Rock thing, if it happens, I'm hopeful, just like you. I said this to Joel Pearl and Andrew Zarian on We're Live Pal. If Rock is not ready for the Rumble, just bring out the young Rock guy and have him win the Rumble. I mean, it's just The Rock, right?
That's Swap it out.
He wins the Rumble, and then Dwayne gets the main event.
He's the proxy.
You can do it that way. But there's all of a sudden there's now talk Austin, and I'm a big Austin guy too, so I'm excited to hear that. So we'll see what happens this Saturday. Andrew and I are going to be live on this channel, on the F4W channel, after the show. We're going to do a little we're live pal after dark.
There you go.
We're still in the gimmick that you and me and Drosty and Jeremy had. We're gonna have a glass of Terramana while we review the show live. So that's what we're gonna do. Okay, before we get out of here, what is your ultimate climax to the Bloodline storyline? How do you want to see this thing end?
Oh my gosh! I mean, I've gone so many different ways on this. I started out where I wanted to see KO, Sammy team up and dethrone the Usos. I thought that would be enough. And now, I mean, especially after Raw 30, I'm like, I'm asking this. This is a legitimate question, so I'd love for you to answer.
Yeah.
Are we at the point where this story is so good, the storyline is so freaking good, that the only sensible payoff where we'd feel any sense of closure is Sami Zayn beating Roman Reigns for the title? Whether it's one or two, is that where we are? Because I think I'm okay with that if that's where we are.
3 months ago, I would have said no effing way.
Okay. I'm with you. I agree.
These last couple weeks, I think it's valid. I think if they wanted to do that, it's completely valid. This is an odd comparison, and it's probably a lame comparison just because it's like two smaller white men. But Sammy is kind of like the Daniel Bryan of 2014. Like he is someone who has been a utility guy. He's been overlooked for main event stuff. Sometimes he's also been injured, but we saw how crazy over he was at NXT, and he's kind of come up and been a little marginalized on the main roster. Always a fan favorite. People love him, but they never saw him as a main event talent. And this run, you are seeing his ability to get over with this live audience and to be, it is Roman's thing. It is, you know, Roman is the Achilles heel of the whole thing. Roman drives this whole thing. But Sammy has not missed a beat in this opportunity to really be a guy. And so, like I said before, you know, go back a few months, I would have said, are you kidding me? This has got to end in this way with, you know, Rock or Cody.
With Rock, yeah.
But now, man, you know, if you say no to Sammy at this point and you say, no, we can't do it, I get it. I still get it. I understand it. But you might be throwing away some business here. So I don't know. I'm very intrigued, though. I'm very intrigued.
So tell me what you think about this, right? These are the two options I have in my head for in terms of fantasy booking, right? It's either Roman Rock for both titles. Roman retains. That's fine. I'm honestly fine with that. As long as we get Roman Rock.
Mm-hmm.
The alternate is Roman has to defend one belt on night one and the other on night two. Night one is Cody. Night two is Sammy. He loses both. Is that fathomable?
Well, okay. So the reason why I don't hate that is because this entire Roman run is the payoff has to be someone else getting over. Like you don't keep the belt on him for 2 years plus. For then him to lose it, and then whoever he loses it to is just like not the next guy,
right?
I think Cody. I'm a little worried about Cody getting booed this weekend, just because I think the fans desperately want Sammy to win this Royal Rumble. Yeah. So that'll be interesting how they play that. But if Cody is sort of like a top guy for the future, and Sammy gets it, I would be very interested in how a Triple H run WWE books Sami Zayn, because I know how Vince McMahon booked WWE would book Sami Zayn, and that is to make sure that he fails because he was not Vince's guy. So that, you know, I think that also is going to play into it. Who knows if Vince gets you know, forces himself back into the creative piece. I'm watching these ratings really closely because I'm waiting for Vince just to point to something and go, see, this is why I need to be back in charge.
Raw 30 just did a monster number, right?
Crazy number. They gimmicked it with the no commercials for the first hour, but it was fantastic. So, you know, that when they can do that, it's great because more people will probably watch the Royal Rumble now because of that. So,
no, it's all. I mean, they timed it perfectly. So,
hey, man,
I was in either way, but.
I want Wednesday Worldwide to become a giant success for you guys. I'm, you know me. I'm just ultimately just in your corner because we are, you know, we kind of have the same vision for stuff when it comes to the content and what we want to do. And to see you be able to have this opportunity, I just want to see you grow the show and make this show like absolutely must listen. So I'm in your corner. I'll be listening. I would love to have your co-hosts on this show and on We're Live Pal as well at some point. So hope to make that connect and get a little bit of Ringer, a little bit more Ringer, you know, Wrestling Observer crossover stuff. I think that would be great. And that would be a lot of fun. But yeah, I'm so happy and I can't wait to hear more from what you guys talk about Wednesday on the Ringer Wrestling Network.
I mean, first of all, you know, the feeling is mutual in terms of how much I love and respect you as a person and everything that, you know, we've gotten to go through since we've gotten to know each other. So one, would love to have you on the show at some point, kind of moving forward here. Brian and Cal would be amazing on this show. So I will connect you with them 1,000%. Absolutely. They are ready to go at the drop of a hat. Nice. Those guys are incredible. So, you know, I appreciate all the kind words and all the support from day one, honestly. I mean, you know, me and Jeremy were running that little shop over at Two Jabronis and you and Drosty were just two of the people who always believed in what we did and what we continue to do. I mean, our group chat is still lit. You know what I mean? Yeah. So you know, the shows might have kind of different or kind of gone in different directions over the last couple of years, but the conversations have not. But you know, I appreciate the hell out of you and everything that you've done and how you support us and myself. So nothing but love from our side. So
100%. All right. So go check out, go subscribe to the Ringer Wrestling podcast feed. Check out Ben and his two co-hosts on Wednesday, Worldwide Wednesday. Ben, thank you so much for hanging out with us. And we will have you on again in the near future.
You're the man.
All right, John, we are back to close out the show. Like we said, originally, Royal Rumble is this weekend. I will be at Big Dave's. You will not be at Big Dave's, so we're going to miss you. I think it's actually no Jeremy either. So it's me and Brian. I don't know if John Quinn is coming or not. So maybe a smaller party. Yeah, Rubber, I don't know about Rubio. Did you get a text while we're during the show?
No, I didn't get a text from him, but we were chatting a couple days ago, just kind of catching up. But yeah, I hope you guys get together. All more people go there. I just can't go. You know, it's going to be a busy day for me the next day too. So it's busy couple days coming up for me. So,
and then like I said, just one more reminder: Andrew Zarian and I were Live Pal after dark. I think we're both gonna. I don't know. I might have a little Taramana while we do the show. It'll be fun.
I'm gonna fire up my phone and pop in.
Yeah. No.
Send totally. A question. I'm gonna send a question in.
Hell yeah. So. Check us out on the F4W online YouTube feed, and then also we'll have the audio up in the We're Live Pal feed on F4WOnline.com. All right. So I want to thank Ben for doing the show. I imagine he'll be on again probably sooner than later. Also, thanks to John for always doing a great job and being Johnny on the spot when I only gave him a couple hours to get ready for a segment. So
it was a busy day, man. That was a pretty busy day.
So for John and Ben, I am Double G. We will see you when we see you. Peace out.